Hi, everyone. Welcome to EHS This Week's podcast for the week ending August the 15th. I'm Nicolette Acuna.
And I'm JP Nadeau.
And we're bringing you the latest stories in environmental health and safety. So we're going to start off with a story about the California Heat Illness Prevention Standard. So California is requesting public comment on proposed revisions to the state's Heat Illness Prevention Standard. Currently, California's Division of Occupational Safety and Health requires employers to provide employees with drinking water and shade when temperatures exceed 85 degrees Fahrenheit and take additional precautions when outdoor temperatures reach 95 degrees Fahrenheit. Proposed amendments to the standard would require employers to provide pure and fresh drinking water at no cost and within 400 feet of where employees are working, also to provide shade that can accommodate all workers on break and within 700 feet of where employees are working. It requires employers to initiate high heat procedures at 85 degrees Fahrenheit instead of 95 degrees and offer on-site first aid or emergency medical services to employees that have heat illness symptoms before sending those employees home. The state's Occupational Safety and Health Standards Board is scheduled to host a public meeting on September 25th in San Diego to receive public comments or proposals if you're interested in attending. So there's also a new study from the Center for Injury about people who work two or more jobs, how they are at an increased risk for fatigue and injury. So researchers analyzed data from 2003 to 2011 and using statistics from the Census Bureau's American Time Use Survey. They found that multiple job holders, so who represented 9.8% of more than 76,000 adults surveyed, faced large differences in how they spent their time versus single job holders. The researchers concluded that multiple job holders may be at heightened risk for fatigue compared with single job holders because of a combination of the following factors. So long work hours concurrent with multiple shifts, longer daily commute time, less time for sleep, and less time for household and leisure activities. So when researchers analyzed the 24-hour diary data, they found that people who worked two or more jobs on the same day averaged more than two additional work hours than single job holders. They also found that multiple job holders averaged less sleep, 45 minutes less on weekdays and 62 minutes less on weekends, and were more likely to work odd hours between 5 p.m. and 7 a.m. So hopefully this data is going to be used to create some useful resources for the workers with second jobs on how they can prevent exhaustion and stay healthy. Switching industries, JP, I think you have a story from the FAA.
Yeah, that's right. According to a press release that just came out, the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, is working in partnership with the National Air Traffic Controllers Association, and they've implemented a safety reporting program that is intended to allow certain employees within the agency to raise safety concerns without any fear of retaliation. So the FAA safety reporting program will be extended to the 550 employees of the Office of Airports, which is responsible for all programs regarding airport safety and inspections and standards for airport design, construction, and operation.
So how does the program work?
So through the airport voluntary reporting system, if an employee sees or experiences any type of safety issue, they can file a confidential report about it. And after it's filed, an oversight board of three FAA executives will review, investigate, and help resolve the issue and make any recommendations they have how to mitigate it.
That sounds like a great program for employees so they don't fear retaliation and they can make sure safety is a priority.
Yeah, absolutely. It kind of falls into the whole whistleblower type of conversation. But yeah, absolutely. This should make it a little bit easier for people to report any safety concerns, which obviously helps everyone out. So you've got a story on the USDA?
Yes. So a new notice from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Food Safety and Inspection Service outlines procedures for agency inspection personnel when notifying OSHA when they observe workplace hazards. So published August 11th, the notice details how to inform OSHA about working conditions such as blocked exits, electrical hazards, or lack of machine guards. The notice also implements required safety and health training for FSIS personnel on topics such as recognizing and reporting safety hazards. Additionally, FSIS inspectors will share with management of inspected facilities NIOSH recommendations for improving work conditions and minimizing any factors that could lead to risk of musculoskeletal disorders. The instructions that are laid out actually stem from a new rule in which USDA pledged to work with OSHA on increasing FSIS personnel's awareness of safety hazards. FSIS released an advanced copy of the modernization of poultry slaughter inspection final rule on July 31st of this year, and it's available in our resources section below if you're interested. Wrapping up, JP, I think you have a story on the U.S. Army and workplace safety.
Yeah, there was a really interesting article that we came across on how the U.S. Army can teach employers about working safely. So essentially, you know, U.S. Army leaders and soldiers, they're inherently working in dangerous conditions by the nature of what they do, but just because they're constantly constantly in dangerous situations doesn't mean that they don't work hard to be safe. So, you know, they're constantly planning, rehearsing, and acting to conduct dangerous activities as safely as possible, even while under the most challenging conditions. So most business leaders would be startled to know, actually, that the U.S. Army's accident rate is nearly 9 times lower than the accident rate for the U.S. industry, which I found actually was quite surprising as well.
That is surprising.
So the U.S. Army, it's similar to many areas of businesses, as on a daily basis, they're doing things like they drive thousands of miles, they repair heavy machinery, they operate logistics depots, conduct refueling operations, and operate restaurants in all of their dining facilities. So unlike other U.S. So there's a great opportunity for U.S. businesses to embrace and adopt the majority of the U.S. Army's safety techniques to improve and reduce their accident rates. So the U.S. Army's safety practices are built on 4 major principles. So we'll just run through those real quick. Number one is common ongoing training. So in the Army, all soldiers and leaders have a common training foundation and then a common education foundation in their particular operating specialty. So businesses can embrace common training principles as well for both their frontline workers and as well as their leaders. And, you know, a common training platform ensures that all of the workers understand, practice, and embrace safe operating practices from their very first day on the job. Number two, safety is part of everyone's job in the Army. So for every daily mission, the day begins with a safety briefing, a medical evacuation procedure, and a rehearsal of the day's most dangerous activities. So anyone in the Army, from the newest private to the seasoned sergeant, they can all halt a particular activity if they believe there is danger to anyone happening. Number three, the Army has an established and universal safety planning procedure. So they use a standard safety planning process called the risk management process, and it's comprised of standard risk identification, risk mitigation, and risk planning procedures. And so the fourth principle that the Army uses is the after-action review process, the AAR they call it. And it's used after every major and minor training and operational activity. And it allows every member to participate, regardless of their rank, to discuss, number one, what happened, number two, what went well, and number three, what didn't go well, and number four, what the plan is to fix what didn't go well. So the Army, ultimately, through those four principles, uses a positive approach towards safety planning and safe practice implementation, which can really be mirrored by any business, in a way that the Army is working to protect their personnel, material, and resources as essentially their national assets. The same concept can be totally applied to businesses, as their employees' material and resources are assets to their organization. So interesting parallel there between the Army and their kind of view and practice on safety, and how there really is some lessons and some best practices that can be learned by businesses there, by how the Army follows those four principles. They really do align very, very closely to businesses as well. So I thought that was quite interesting.
And I think that's it for the week. We hope you enjoyed this week's stories, and we'll talk to you next week.
Have a safe week.